Hey guys, it's Medina. It's the night before Thanksgiving 2016. I got a fire going. I've got my turkey dry brining in the refrigerator. And I'm looking forward to the big feast tomorrow. We're going to take the week off to be with our families and our friends. And we're hoping that you all are doing the same. We're not going to leave you totally high and dry, though. We thought it might be fun to start a new tradition this year for the Thanksgiving episode of The Great Debates, and that is that we'd like to give you some topics so that you can play The Great Debates at home. And when you're wondering what to talk about with your relatives, why not just engage them in the civilized sport of debate? And so here you go. I've got three topics for you. And you know how this works. Someone takes the pro, someone takes the con. Maybe you appoint a moderator, might suggest an elder statesperson, perhaps grandma or grandpa. Or maybe you just let the crowd decide and you'll know who wins based on the volume of the laughter and applause. Okay, here are your three topics for the Great Debates game for Thanksgiving 2016. Topic number one, mashed potatoes are over. Topic number two, we would be better friends with the Indians than with the Pilgrims. And topic number three, we have more to be grateful for this year than we did last year. Now, that last one is maybe a little bit charged. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's very tense out there in the United States of America. And leading up to Thanksgiving this year, I've been thinking about something my mom said about the meal itself. And that is that what's important about this holiday is that all across the country, people from all walks of life are going to sit down tonight and they're going to have basically the same meal. And that's an incredibly unifying experience for us, and it binds us all, I think, to one of our important founding myths, and that is the story of the Mayflower and the very first Thanksgiving. You know, at a time when we may be in violent disagreement with one another, here's something that can bring us together. And I think about other cultures who have traditions like these. You know, Passover comes to mind. It's a dinner that maybe no one really likes, but that has been eaten every year for thousands of years. And you know, maybe if the United States is going to make it for thousands of years, part of what will hold us together will be a tradition like this one, where we all sit down and eat the same meal. So without further ado, I've got a classic ep here for you that was chosen by producer Mark, who I'm thankful for this year. I'm also thankful for my co-hosts, Steve Healy and Dave King. And most of all, I'm thankful for you guys, the listeners. So I'd like to wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week. Hey everybody, it's the Great Debates podcast.
Oh, yes.
It sure is, man. Healy, I'm going to take you down today. I just decided I'm going to up my game and I'm going to destroy you.
You're going to have to up it quite a bit, my friend.
Okay,
fine.
Like this.
It's fine.
Saucy. Friendly. Is this friendly competition or unfriendly?
It's always friendly, but I do...
Why don't we jump into it?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's do a micro debate. I've got a topic for you. Healy, let's have you take the pro as per usual. 3 minutes on the clock. The topic is Barack Obama makes a better omelet than Michelle Obama.
Okay, I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Now, of course, we all know that Barack Obama is the president, and so we think of him as like the alpha kind of guy in their relationship, but the career of Michelle Obama is extraordinary. This is a tough, hard-charging woman, and I think she doesn't waste a lot of time making omelets. That's not her scene. She was rising from Princeton. She went to law school. She was an attorney. She's a very powerful, intense woman. I don't think she got there by diddling around with omelets. Now, you see Obama, and he does have the kind of fun, loosey-goosey, kind of friendly dad attitude. So I think on a Saturday morning, he's the guy waking up early, making the omelets for Sasha and Malia. He has some fun with it, jokes around. Then Michelle comes down, drives over to the basketball practice. They get down to business. So I think that Barack Obama is the better omelet maker in the couple.
You're so wrong. Healy, look, here are the two main things you have to know.
Okay.
Sometimes, for better or worse, gender roles that we would prefer to no longer be societal norms are still the norms in a household, especially where people are of a certain generation. And I would say that this generation, the Robinson-Obama family, dates back to a time when women cooked more often, for better or worse. Again, I say that that's not the way it should be.
This is crazy. Michelle Obama has been breaking norms her whole life. That's her whole deal.
It's true, but that doesn't mean that...
If anything, she doesn't make omelets just so she doesn't live up to traditional gender norms, just to make a point.
No, I think that's absurd, because...
More so, if we're talking about traditional gender roles, like, and we're really getting real...
Let me talk.
Chefs, the greatest French chefs are all men. That's who's excellent at making omelets.
That's true, but an omelet is a staple food that you make for yourself or your children.
Making a good omelet is one of the hardest things a chef can do.
Let me move on to another point. Barack Obama was raised in Hawaii. Michelle Obama was raised in Illinois. Hawaii has more of a varied culture of foods. I believe Michelle Robinson was exposed to more omelets at a young age than Barack was.
In Hawaii, there are chickens running around.
But they don't cook
all the time.
They're not eating omelets. And Michelle's the one who's going to learn how to cook an omelet.
He also spent a lot of time in Kansas.
Look, you know, also, sometimes the obvious things are the things we need to address. Barack Obama has been busier than Michelle Obama for the last years. And therefore, Michelle has had more time to practice her omelet-making skills. She probably had better skills to begin with once Barack, even dating back to before Barack started seeking office. This is a classic, don't overthink it. We have no possible way of fucking knowing, but chances are Michelle Obama makes a better omelet than Barack Obama.
I think when we see the public expressions of their marriages, what is very clear is that Barack and Michelle, neither one of them tolerates, no matter how successful Barack is or how busy he is, they don't tolerate falling into these traditional norms. I think he makes a point.
Yeah, the timer went off.
Medina, what did you think?
You know, I liked where you were going at the outset there.
Who?
Steve. But then it just got into a big morass.
Wow.
It
I did? Know. Well, I don't know.
No winner. Perhaps no winner.
What do you think? No Who winner. Makes the better omelet, Michelle and Barack?
I like the idea that Barack makes the better
Of course,
though.
That's the sexier argument, but that doesn't mean that it's the right one.
I think that is true.
But I also like, Dave, I like that you took a stand on traditional gender roles as being like sort of like a
thing. Yeah, they were born in the 60s. Like, they're more likely to adhere to those norms than we are, than a married couple who gets married in their 20s in this decade.
I mean, the image of Barack being the kind of like loosey-goosey Saturday morning guy, great.
I mean, I think the whole point of Michelle Obama's career has been like, I'm not going to be the one making the omelets, okay? I'm going to break down all those.
I wonder
maybe
if that's
her career,
true
but is that true?
It's how about didn't really she sponsor you. The garden in the White House, the
that's
vegetable
right.
garden?
That's right, Healy. That's what I should have mentioned. She's Ooh. All about nutrition.
Yeah,
she has welcomed the kitchen as her sphere of as her domain, if you will.
How about Bill and Hillary? Who is better at omelet making?
I don't think either of them have any idea what the first thing you do is when you make an omelet.
No, I think Bill can make a mean omelet.
I like. Well,
how many times
right?
do you think Bill's gotten laid because of his omelet making?
He's never made an omelet.
Of course, he has.
He doesn't need to make an omelet to get laid.
You know what? You know what he does? Here's Bill's game. The next morning, he's like, "Come on downstairs, let me make you an omelet." And he brings the woman downstairs, and then before you know it, she's making the omelet.
Yes. Okay.
He's
that's
never
great.
Finished
that's
making the omelet.
He's never finished. Making it
first step is to take the eggs out, and I'm gonna go. I gotta take a phone call. And, if you want to make them,
do you know
you
how
like
to
them?
Do this? My mother, she taught me. But
she's got a great recipe. But if you want to make them,
how much butter do I put in there?
I mean, he's eating egg McMuffins. Yeah. Who are we kidding?
He's vegan now, right? Or veg?
I think so.
He looks not as hearty as he used to.
Healy, What do you got for host chat?
I've got something from the mailbag.
Oh, the mailbag.
We're going to open up the old mailbag. We had a great spirited debate a couple weeks ago with our buddies BJ Novak and John Mayer
about
whether truckers have it all.
Yeah, right? I remember that. I loved that debate.
It was really fun. John and BJ were passionate that truckers have like life figured out. This is coming from a... Yeah,
passionately wrong.
From a rock star and television movie personality claiming that truckers have it all figured out. Well, a trucker wrote into us.
I love that.
That's right. We requested feedback from truckers. We asked for roses and thorns.
Yes,
as I recall.
And yes, and you. By the way, we also argued off the air about whether roses and thorns is an apt descriptor of the good and the bad.
Yeah, right? What was your
really
point about
semantic
that?
And dorky.
Yeah. Yeah, my general point, my specific point is that the thorn is part of the rose, and so. When you're asking for the good and the bad, what you if you're talking about the rose...
So you'd prefer the bloom and the thorn.
The bloom and the thorn, like or the flower and the thorn. Well, there's no good word
to
describe the head of the flower, if you will.
I hear in my head listeners clicking off this podcast.
And again, as always, I agree with the behavior and the choice of those listeners. But I feel it's my duty to point out that... If you're going to say roses and thorns on the podcast, I think that that's not the best way of describing it.
What I want to know is, does that statement make more of our listeners become Healy people or more of them become
I think
King
that's
people?
Fairly obvious.
Go ahead and write up.
Here's Greg Horch writing into the Great Debates email. By the way, everybody should always be emailing us, tweeting at us, GreatDebates69.
So you're saying everybody should always be emailing us?
Well, we should be getting tons of emails. We're doing great on that, but right. Greg Horch.
Horch me.
Horch. First line, truckers do not have it made. Let's be honest, though. Does anyone, he says?
I mean, that's what it's really all about.
This guy's a very wise
He says he's been guy. A long-haul trucker for the last 2 years. I will use, says Greg, roses and thorns format requested.
Mm-hmm. He gets it.
Well, he
resonates
is simply
with
using the terminology that I believe we mistakenly put out to the world.
Here are some of his roses. Takes about 3 months, then you're making $800 a week. No team meetings, no irritating coworkers, low overhead. Get to see the beautiful USA. Plenty of downtime, he says. I have a road bike in my truck to explore cities and countryside. Listen to any music, podcasts, or audiobooks you choose. 4G at your disposal. Lots of time to exercise. I have kettlebells in my truck. Then he says, sample.
I wouldn't have expected that one. That's interesting.
Lots of time to exercise, yeah.
Yeah.
Sample good micro brews and local food across the country.
That's great. I love this guy.
He says, meet a variety of people, parens ladies, at bars that you most likely never see again.
Way
And then he has an emoji. It's an emoji of like one eyebrow raised, one regular emoji.
Yeah.
And then he says, that's for John in parens. Double meaning, right? Because John was saying men shouldn't use emojis. So I think he's having some fun at Bears.
I'd like to submit that emoji should heretofore be referred to as the Horch. Yeah,
the Horch. He horches us.
The eyebrow raised.
Hours and hours to read books, comfortable truck cab, very simple amenities, forcing you to lead a simple life. Okay. Now, the thorns.
Thorns.
Home about 2 months out of the year, about a week at a time. Never see your friends. Not sure how you could be in a healthy relationship.
Ugh.
Very little physical touch.
Boy, he really puts a pin on it. Yeah. That's sad, really.
Very little conversation, loss of social skills, could die or kill others in an accident.
Kill others, that's so interesting. Kill we talked about the safety of the driver.
Yeah, that's stressful.
But
he doesn't mention all the stuff we were talking about, loading and unloading and whatever.
So thoughtful, this guy. I love this.
In conclusion, truckers do have a lot of freedom. We can make most of our own decisions when it comes to work and downtime. If you choose to make healthy decisions and actively explore this country and the diverse bunch of crazy motherfuckers in it, I believe you'll have an amazing experience. That being said, long-haul trucking is comparable to solitary confinement. The lack of meaningful social interaction is unhealthy and proven to shorten the human's lifespan.
Mm. Wow.
He's planning on getting off the road and working a local trucking job very soon. He wouldn't trade the last 2 years for anything, but cannot imagine a year in long-haul trucking. So to answer BJ's question, has anybody ever said stop trucking? Well, let me be that someone. BJ, stop trucking. Thanks for the great podcast. Sincerely, Greg the Trucker.
Greg, thank you so much for that excellent letter.
Thank you, Greg. I hope you're out there on the road somewhere beautiful.
You know, we shared that email previously with BJ, and he said that email. I think he said that made his day. That it was so rich with detail.
It's a great email. Well done.
Thank you, Greg.
A bright future ahead for Greg.
I'm going to try to make healthier decisions and see more of this beautiful country because
sample
local
microbrews.
Greg's email.
Yeah,
I'm going the other way. My New Year's resolution is to become totally unhealthy, I'm going to try to hit two bills. I'm going to eat as much as I can. Wow. All donuts. I'm going to try to... So my goal is to weigh 200 pounds.
Okay.
And I'm going to...
Two bill Dave would be impressive. That's you're talking about a gain of 77 pounds.
You know what? People would talk.
Oh, yeah.
People would talk. It could be what I'm going for. I'm not as far away as you might think.
Do you think you'd be more or less beloved at 200 pounds than you are now?
I think more.
Yes.
I think I would be a more sympathetic figure. Yes. Yes. I think people would be like, oh, Dave, the funny fat guy.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it would be more assumed that you're funny somehow.
Of course. Yeah. Certainly less assumed that I'm a terrorist, which I would welcome. Mm, yeah. You don't see a lot of obese terrorists. Have you noticed that?
No, they're lean over there in ISIS.
Yeah.
They don't have a ton of Hardee's there.
Okay.
You know, I've been working with a lot of Hispanics lately. And what I've learned about these guys is that there are, in talking with them and learning to speak language, there are fatsos amongst the group always. And they essentially go by the name Gordo. People call them Gordo, which means fatso. Great. They call each other fatso. And when someone says, hey, fatso, to one of the guy turns and says, yeah, what is it? What can I do for
you? Right,
sure. Okay. Is there Dave, I think...
Yeah, I'd love to be the Gordo.
Is there a skinny guy equivalent? Hey.
Delgado? I don't know. No, I don't think so. But I think if you're fat, it's okay to be called fatso.
And I wonder if this is, I would love to know this. If in other cultures, does that quote unquote joke exist where the fat guy is ironically called tiny? I would love to know, does a fat guy in Russian, is he called, or is it something slightly different, like the small one? Or is there, what's going on there? This is easily researchable, but I'm going to just instead ask someone to tell me what's
the answer.
You
hate that I keep bringing up the Philip and Frederick podcast, but they were talking on there about Laurel and Hardy in Indonesia is called 10. The Indonesian word
it's
for 10.
One and zero.
It's
one
skinny guy and a zero.
Sure. So clever. Clever. Yeah,
that's great. They're having fun.
Guys, I've got a main event debate.
Are you ready?
On this one, we're going to switch sides, and Dave's going to take the pro. This is a listener top. That is a topic that was sent in to us, I think, via Twitter.
Love Twitter.
By a listener. I'm going to make 2016 the year that I figure out Twitter, by the way.
It should be. That's the easiest resolution anyone's ever made. You can do it, man. You
have some achievements.
We'll help you. You can figure it out.
Okay. So Kayla Banker sent in this topic to us via Twitter. Dave's going to take the pro. The topic is parades are a waste of time and resources.
I'm Dave King. I'll be taking the pro. What a great topic. And Kayla, thank you for submitting this. As a side note, if I had been born a girl, my parents were going to name me Kayla, just the way you spell it, K-A-Y-L-A. It's a topic for another time. It might surprise you, but it's true. Kayla Amy King.
Who's ever heard of a Jewish Kayla?
I'm telling you, it surprised me too when I found out from my parents, but K-A-Y-L-A-A-I-M-E-E is what they were going to go with. Amy. And instead, out came a little dude with a tiny wiener, and here I am, David Aaron. Parades are a waste of time and resources. Nothing has ever been closer to the truth. Every time you go to a parade, all you do is sit there. And there's maybe one or two highlights. And, you know, there's a marching band where the music isn't that good. Often the weather is terrible. Every time that a family goes to a parade, you think the kids are going to love it, but all it is waiting. And it's always a letdown. I should say it's usually a letdown. Kids get impatient. You think a parade, you think in a mind, your parade, oh, it's a big spectacle. There's going to be movement. There's going to be a sense of a parade, for lack of a better word. What you actually get is a stagnant experience. You're locked in. That to actually witness a parade is to be confined to one place for in hours on end. And what's the best that you get? A local celebrity drives by, you're treated to a local, you know, high school marching band or a parade of cars. Even the best parades in the world, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, the Rose Bowl Parade, what is this? They're purely, they come off, I find often as jingoistic or something, there's something... What am I looking for? It almost harkens back to a time where we, didn't know better than to celebrate ourselves with there's no self-awareness involved. That's what I think is my ultimate problem with the parade. And that's the ending of my wandering absurd opening
statement.
In
a world of crippling anxiety where nobody ever has a parade. No, a parade is an expression of communal joy and exuberance and our shared values. That's what it is. That's why it's wonderful. I'm disgusted with you, Dave. You come from Needham, Massachusetts, a town that has one of the famously great 4th of July parades. When we were kids, they had a 4th of July parade in Needham, Mass., where they would have square dancers on a flatbed truck.
Boring.
They would have British reenactors.
Boring.
They would have the guys from World War II, the survivors of POW camps.
Who cares?
The American Legion bros.
Snooze.
Guys holding their old military musket with one arm. They'd have marching bands from the bands would come from New York to Needham's 4th of July parade. And their people are throwing their candy.
Mediocre.
The local politicians are waving. The community is coming together and celebrating the joy of America. It's a wonderful occasion.
It's a disgusting display.
It's a joyous display of everything that's great about this wonderful country.
Ely, you know that you're leaving a couple of key things out about the Needham 4th of July parade. One of those things is that Fred Muzzy, the owner of Muzzy Ford, go ahead. You want to explain it or should I?
Go ahead and explain it, but listeners, tell me you wouldn't enjoy seeing this.
Okay. Fred Muzzy was the owner of a car dealership, and he would dress up in red face, in fact, red body,
yes,
as a Native American or Native Indian.
He would strip
Indian
down to a loincloth.
Yeah, and ride around on a horse,
red,
I believe.
And ride on a horse saying, how?
In a horrifying, yes, racist display.
And every year there'd be letters to the editor of the newspaper to get rid of this. Somebody said, come on, it's
a
tradition.
And he was protected by the community.
What is the fun happening?
He was protected.
Now, look, whether Fred Muzzy is taking it too far, that's fine. But the parade is,
okay,
it's a letting out of social tension. It's a relieving of our social stress and a celebration of our communal
values. Here's the other thing that you're ignoring about the Needham Parade. I went to that parade and I've recently watched home movies of me in attendance at the parade. As a young boy, I was a happy boy. I was an easygoing, believe it or not, generally happy boy. And I was in the video, I'm bored. I'm sitting there, my mom is trying to entertain me, my sister's going like, when is this the real thing gonna happen? This is it. It's you have to
okay, first
no
of all,
kid
as a boy, you should have been
there.
Needham had a great children's parade where you could decorate your bike and be in the parade and win prizes.
Healy,
me and my sister won a pool table.
Healy, I'm so glad you brought this
that's
up.
That's a true fact.
That good for you and your sister.
Yeah, that's why we're such good at pool sharks now.
As a matter of fact, Stephen Charles Healy, I have walked in multiple parades as both a child and an adult.
You never walked with your Little League team in the Needham
Parade?
Yes, I
did.
You didn't enjoy that, and people were waving it. Hi, Dave. Hi, Mrs.
I'll tell
Larry.
You what happened, Healy. I enjoyed it for 5 minutes, and then I was bored out of my mind. Yeah. All you're doing is walk. You just want it to be over. Nothing happens. I also,
you know what's boring? Baseball, a presidential election.
This,
but those things are may part be true. Of the American spirit. They're celebrations. They're necessary parts of the American emotional life.
And so too are
parades.
And Japanese internment camps.
Whoa.
And
whoa,
yay,
whoa,
bully
whoa,
for dressing
whoa,
up as a red man
whoa,
and parading
whoa, whoa.
Your body
you
about for the children.
How are you just slipping Japanese internment camps into parades?
My point is that just because something is part of the history of America doesn't mean that the spirit of it is in... is innocent and good. We have, you know, you can't, yeah, and we're not, the debate we're having isn't even necessarily that parades are bad. It's that they're a waste. What is it? That they're a waste of resources?
A waste of time.
They're
and
a waste
resources.
Of That's all it is. We're not saying they're a moral bad. We're just saying it's a waste
they're
of time and resources. Of course they are.
I think it's time for closing statements. What parades are is a joyous expenditure of time and resources celebrating. And money and time spent celebrating our common values, bringing us together as a community. Adults, children, Little League teams, veterans, square dancers, guys on a horse. All these things brought together and celebrated. How can that possibly be a waste? It's the greatest expenditure of joy we can think of. You know, we can't just be, you know, Mr. Potter, Scrooge over here saving our time and resources for nothing. We have to, on great occasions, we spend them. On the 4th of July, at the Macy's Parade, at the Rose Bowl, we spend our time and resources celebrating our wonderful values with a parade.
There's so many things better to spend our community resources on than a parade, for example, feeding the homeless, even just going to the libraries. I could go on and on with the better ways to spend our
The library has a float in the parade.
Good for them. That's a waste of money. Better spent just buying fucking books for the library than to spend it on building a float for the library. Healy, I'm going to admit an embarrassing fact. When I was in college, I was a member of the marching band. Now, I'm not proud of that. I was a huge nerd, and I played the clarinet, and I was damn good. And we marched in a parade or two, and it was the worst day of my – it was so boring and endless. You think of a parade as being a constant stream of happy people. Not so the case at all. It's actually pockets of people who kind of, hey, okay, what's – and then you got to stand there because not unlike a highway, there's traffic that builds up in a parade, and you often have to stand in place even when you're in the parade.
Could parade management be improved? Absolutely.
But for now, it's a waste of time and resources. And children know this. You know what's interesting? I've seen a lot of pictures on Facebook of families who go to parades. And I'm not joking about this, and I'm not reaching either, I don't think. You'll notice that the pictures are like, you very rarely see more than one happy picture of the kids. And oftentimes you'll see pictures of, if the parent is being honest or making a little joke, you'll see them post pictures that are like, hour three, getting a little tired, or something to that effect. Kids don't like being at parades more than really like 20 minutes. What's the best parade you've ever been to? It was a waste of time and resources. That's the end of my closing statement.
Dina, what'd you think?
I don't feel... Okay, here's what I think. I recently watched the film Best of Enemies. This is about William Buckley and Gore Vidal taking each other on these historical debates during the 1968 Republican and then Democratic National Conventions. And there are these two of America's greatest intellects going at it in these debates, and they talk about absolutely nothing. They just insult each other the whole time. Right? There's very little substance to the debates between...
It's a great doc. It's available on Netflix, really good, by the way.
So you're
very
thinking more of that?
Okay, so what I want to say about this debate, I'm a little pissed off because we didn't determine whether or not parades are a waste of time or resources.
You think we got too personal?
Your point, Dave, was that parades are boring and jingoistic, and well, Steve's point was that they were a celebration of community joy. And like... I don't really feel like I got to the economic reality of the question here.
Man, I don't disagree with you.
Wow, a failed debate.
I got to tell you, being dressed down by Medina,
it hurts.
It's like your dad calling you into your room and being like, "You let me down."
Hey, but you know what? It'll kick us into gear for next week.
That being said, I was also in the marching band.
Yeah,
was in a number of parades.
Well, you were in high school.
In high school,
yeah. And you played
the trumpet.
Yeah, so that's cooler.
My first instrument was also clarinet.
I didn't know that, Medina. Yeah,
very first clarinet. Then I switched after a semester to...
Very smart.
In Davis, in winters, they have something called the Youth Day Parade, where we, like you were saying, Healy, where we ride our bikes or we our big wheels or whatever, and we put the streamers on them and all that. That's great. In Davis, California, very close to where I grew up in winters, is the Picnic Day Parade. And they have great marching bands. Humboldt Band is there, the UC Davis Band is there, maybe even the Stanford Band comes,
yeah.
I don't know. Battle of the Bands. They have old vintage tractors that go the thing. They get the square dancers.
I gotta ask.
It's fantastic. I love that parade.
Picnic Day a specific day of the year? Is it like August 14th is Picnic
Day?
Well,
it's a specific weekend.
Okay. Is it like Labor Day weekend?
The springtime. I think it's like April or something.
Great.
Is it around Mother's Day? No, that's Whole Earth Day.
What's Whole Earth Day?
Whole Earth Day is a celebration of the values that we associate with conservatism and conservation and
spirit and all that. Hippie Central.
Yeah.
That's great.
I think my parents met in a class that was about plants and horticulture and the earth and environmentalism, and then this class then spawned what is now Whole Earth Day, which is a really huge celebration in the town of Davis, California.
That's great. Real quick, let's go around the horn. How did your parents meet? Healy, you're up.
They met because my dad's fraternity brother went on a date with my mom, came back to the frat house, and was like, "I just met your wife."
That's cool.
Yeah.
God damn, that's great story.
Davis?
My parents were high school sweethearts. They grew up together in Elmont, New York. My mom was dating a different guy, I think maybe senior year of high school. He broke up with her. My dad said, "This is my shot." Asked her out.
I got one shot. Do not miss this opportunity.
He heard the Eminem song in his head, even though it wouldn't come out for another 50 years, 40 years. And anyway, the rest is history.
New goal, do great debates at Picnic Day in Davis.
Let's do it. It's a fun day, guys. We'll be there. It'll be really fun. Everybody, we'll see you at Picnic Day. And we'll see you before then next week. As our part of our regular podcast, The Great Debates. Can't wait. Kayla, thanks again for your top. Greg, thanks for your letter. Listeners, thanks for your support.
You know, I don't know if Kayla Banker and Greg Horch are single, but I say they should reach out to you. I'd love to matchmake right here in The Great Debates.
That's a great idea.
Maybe Kayla Banker is the future Kayla Horch.
Okay, guys, we'll see you next week on The Great Debates. Wow.